chats from the Blog Cabin.
This is your favorite time of the week with your number one podcast.
Hey guys, I'm so excited you're here back with me today. Closing out the month of love, which is February, I am doing an interview today with a romance author. I will have to say that this particular interview and the next couple of ones coming up, I did have to cut a few pieces. I did edit it. Full disclosure, it's not that the pieces were that she didn't have a lot to say, but I just felt like because I have all different ages listening to this podcast and all different nationalities, all different, I did not want this podcast to be banned anywhere. So I just clipped the part of the book where she was reading her sex scene because I don't want to have to mark this as explicit because this is such a great podcast and it's about some amazing issues. And I just really, and I just absolutely adore her. She was so sweet and so funny to interview. And I just did not want this podcast to be banned anywhere. So with that, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Patricia. I honestly can say that I really enjoyed it as well. So I hope you enjoy it.
Come join Melissa and her guests on the Chats from the Blog Cabin podcast. From North Carolina, this podcast will have you feeling like you've known these folks for years. Listen in as they chat about life, culture, current events, and more, all with a special Southern flair. Curl up with your favorite beverage and get ready to be entertained. Tune in now for a unique experience that's fun and insightful.
Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Chats from the Blog Cabin. You know, the show where I virtually invite people into the Blog Cabin to chat about life. And today we are chatting with adult romance author Patricia, and she is here to tell us about her book, Sacrifices for Kingdoms, and also just about how you got started in all this. So give us a little bit about yourself, Patricia, before we start into the book.
Well, I've always wanted to write books. And from a child, I made notes in little notebooks, and I wrote poems, I wrote songs. And then I went to school. I was lucky. I was born in the Caribbean in a multicultural society, Trinidad. Although I'm British and French, it was British at the time. Mm-hmm. And I went to school in England, another British island. And from there, I traveled from quite young. From about 16, I started traveling. And I just wrote all along the way, even wrote a full book about basically a play, a stage play, written in Elizabethan, full Shakespearean language.
Woo!
And I lost it, unfortunately, because I traveled so much. Mm-hmm. I got very young. Desires to write a love story, even though I had so little experience. But then I did marry young as a teenager and had a lot to learn. And I'm a good listener, so I always would listen to people's stories. And this got me started on thinking, I need to write a book. And it eventually evolved into a trilogy. So I just actually released the first in the trilogy, and that book is called Sacrifices for Kingdoms, Book One. Book Two is on the way, and Book Three will be next year late. So that's what's been going on.
So you said at a very early age that you wanted to write. Where do you think that came from? Was it because of all the adventures you had at an early age, or was this something that was a deep desire within you all along?
I'm just a very observant person, and I found from young, I was into people's stories. I remember as a child, all the aunts would come over to my parents' home, and my mom and the aunts, they would be sitting in the front porch gossiping. And I would be playing with my little dolls. I designed my own dolls, made my own dolls, paper dolls. And I made clothes for my other dolls. And I would be there very quietly listening to them. They had no idea I would be listening. They knew I was in the room. But I was busy with my dolls, so they didn't know that I was listening to every little thing that was going on. And it just intrigued me. And people's stories always intrigued me. And I just wanted to compile different stories that I've heard through the years in a couple of books.
So how much of the Elizabeth's story did you compile from other stories?
Quite a bit, because of her travels. But I also traveled a lot. My husband and I both love to travel, and we did travel to a lot of ancient countries and visited a lot of ancient sites. And we actually traveled with groups quite often, and I would be not always in the group. I would be often with the guide, pumping him for knowledge. And the others would be annoyed with me, or come sit back here and have a glass of wine with us. And I thought to myself, I need my brain cells. I want to write books. And so I got interested in ancient stories, and I wanted to compile that with all the love stories that I'd heard about.
I love that. Now, you said you're from Trinidad and Tobago. Was that the reason why you put Elizabeth from the character in your book from Trinidad and Tobago?
Yes. I did want to expose the fact that people from the Caribbean are from all over the globe. And, you know, my ancestors were French. The first bunch went there from the French Revolution. They were being guillotined.
Ooh.
And, yes, and then when the revolution calmed down, they went back, and then they came back again, and my grandparents were born there in Trinidad. My father's side, he was Irish, British. He grew up as an Irish Catholic in Belfast. And he was a musician, he was a conductor, a very talented young man. And the British Crown sent him to the colony of Trinidad and Tobago to start a police band. So that side, my dad's side, my dad was the first generation, but my mom's side, they were there from way back.
Wow, that's a lot. And I love how you actually put in the book, you have Elizabeth meeting a prince, which I think is kind of almost like, you know, with the English culture, definitely the crown is who people are all about. They're all about the king and the queen. So I love how you incorporated that into the story.
Well, it's very close to home, and that's as far as I'll expose.
Yeah, you also managed to write when you were writing and in your book, managed to put in some social issues. Let's talk about those. What social issues did you put in the book so people can know?
I would say the main problem that we have on the planet today that needs to be discussed more is the lack of equality between genders in power. Mm-hmm. And this is a big fear that we have. Right now, patriarchy has ruled for more than two millennia. We have learned so much. The technology is so immense. We are so advanced, and yet we still can't figure out how not to have all these wars and conflicts. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of research on the brain, and that has a lot to do with the problem, because we have only one sort of hormonal situation running the show for, you know, millennia. And before that, there were many goddesses and gods. As a matter of fact, in most of the ancient countries, goddesses reigned supreme. And along came these patriarchal barbarian tribes 2 millennia ago, and coveted what these people had achieved, wanted to control them. And they decided, well, no more of these goddesses and gods. There's only one god, and it's a man. We have the muscle, and that's that. And from then on, there's just too much conflict, and we have the more aggressive hormone running the show. And it's just not going to bring peace if this continues. We need both genders equally in power controlling this planet, or we will not have peace.
So why do you think that society is so unable to accept that we need both?
Well, you know, our indoctrination has been so immense. You know, our societies have been brainwashed. And women are getting it. I mean, they know that this is wrong. I mean, now that they have been allowed to be educated, which they weren't for millennia, in some countries it still goes on. Women are still not allowed education. Eventually, it comes to light that we've got to have equal gender power. Otherwise, the guys are going to blow it up.
And that's evident in what's going on in the world today now.
Thank you. Yeah, very worrying. I mean, I have 5 grandchildren, 2 great-grandchildren. My children live, all of them, near to me. This worries me terribly. And all my friends, you know, they're concerned. We've got to have some peace now. It's just we're going backwards, not forwards. And it's shocking because we know so much.
That is so true, and especially I'm from the U.S., and I can see in the U.S., from when I grew up to now, it's like it's taking like so many steps backwards. Like right now, they're trying to deny women rights of the choice over their bodies and things like that, that before they brought these things in for the protection of women's health, but now it's like they want to go back and destroy everything all over again.
It's never been about the protection of women's health. It's all about control.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they cared about women's health, women would have choice. They would have autonomy. They would have control over their bodies. I mean, I can't believe in this day and age, we are still having this issue. We're still having this discussion. It's just heartbreaking. And, it's awesome that this is still happening, especially in our country, in the United States.
Mm-hmm. It's horrible. And I love the fact that you were able to write these issues into a novel that's going to not only entertain people, but also educate people. And I love that you did that.
I'm so glad you feel that way. That's exactly my intention. I want people to be enlightened. I mean, a lot of people have no clue about the ancient goddess religions, how powerful they were and so on, and why they were stopped. And you know, eventually, it really boils down, as you know, Melissa, to control this desire for, you know, testosterone, the strength of it controlling. When females are so much calmer, if you check out the brain, it explains it all, the way our brains are formed. The female's brain, her 2 sides of the brain are, you know, the 2 hemispheres are quite closely joined, whereas the men, it's not, it's separated, and it makes them think more with the left hemisphere, and therefore they are more goal-oriented. And the women, because of the joining being much better, they see the big picture more. They look at the broad horizon. They're more pragmatic. And so that's why we need both genders to run the planet, to get peace on Earth.
That is so true. Now we need to take a brief commercial break. When we come back, you're going to read 3 passages from your book, correct?
Yes.
All right, here we go.
The threats women face today are unparalleled and even more dangerous than ever before. one in three women globally, has been the victim of an assault. Women are terrified, and they are looking for answers.
In the book, Street Smart Safety for Women, we draw on our experiences, both personal and professional, to provide those answers. It's by women, for women. Street Smart Safety for Women is available wherever books are sold.
And we are back chatting with Patricia. And now I'm going to let you have the stage so you can read parts of your book. If you want to add, kind of give us a little background on it before you start reading, or however you want to do it.
Well, it's a love triangle. And as you said, Elizabeth meets this prince. And this passage I'm going to read now is their first sort of date. They just meet, and already he wants to take her out to dinner, and they're in the car. And he asks her, where would she like to go? And she said, well, wherever you can go, because she knows he's a prince, so he has security issues. And he tries to reassure her that he has all these guards in the car. He has guards in the car behind, in front. And so this is where I pick it up. Sympathy mixed with her dismay. My lord, how terrible. You mean you can never sneak out, do something privately, all on your own? Can't you wear a disguise? He chuckled. Oh, yes, I have my private moments. On such occasions, I do often wear a disguise. Promise you won't tell anyone? She nodded conspiratorially. He reached forward and pressed the tiny button across from where he sat. The suede upholstery slid out of sight, exposing a surprisingly large compartment filled with assorted spectacles, sunglasses, caps, hats, scarves, wigs, beards, and mustaches. Picking up a blonde wig, a sandy-colored mustache, and a pair of large horn-rimmed tinted glasses, he quickly put them on and turned to face her. How does this look? Shall I wear these tonight? The wig was askew, allowing his contrasting shiny brown hair to hang out on one side only. The mustache was lopsided and the glasses too low on his nose. He looked comical, absolutely ridiculous. Elizabeth burst into laughter. Glancing at a small mirror obliquely across from him, he saw his clownish reflection, whipped off his disguises and threw them on the seat. Then he too collapsed into laughter. They couldn't stop laughing for several minutes. The ice was now broken, and there was a feeling of warm familiarity between them, the kind of feeling that only develops after having known someone for a long time or having shared a private joke with them. They stopped laughing, their heads resting against the back of the seat, almost touching, and turned to face one another. Michael tilted her chin and softly kissed her lips. She turned her head away slowly. Michael, we mustn't. Unable to stop himself, sensing the chemistry between them, he ignored what he assumed to be a false protest and took her in his arms. She tried to resist without pushing him away, she said. Michael, please, we don't have the right. He kissed her again. She tried to move away, but he held her tight and kissed her harder, his tongue pressing between her lips, trying to get her mouth open. Elizabeth's heart began to hammer in her chest. Sensations were racing through her to just one place. She had not had these feelings in a long time and didn't know how to cope with what was happening. She knew it was wrong for her and for him. Being here with him was wrong. Everything she was doing was wrong. Then why did it feel so right, so natural, so perfect? Why did she have this compelling attraction to him? Her common sense told her she was simply flattered by his attentions, that it was a great thrill for even the most blasé of women to be dated and kissed by a prince, particularly this haughty. However, the fact was, he had aroused in her something once so familiar but too long dormant, and she felt herself wanting to succumb and revel in it. She desired this as much as he did. Opened her mouth, and she let his tongue reach for hers. So that's just part of the romance. You know, they're just starting to have, you know, the whole sweetness of falling in love. And then I get to where it gets a little hot and heavy. And they had had a long, busy day, you know, working. And they hadn't had much time with each other. So this is how this scene starts. His lustful thoughts working his body into a sexual frenzy, he called out impatiently, "Elizabeth, please come to bed, darling. Stop brushing your teeth. I want you now." Unaware that he could see her, she giggled and called back, "Patience, darling." She rinsed out her mouth, and in bending over, he got a titillating peek at the object of his desire. In a split second, he leapt from the bed and was upon her like a bull elephant in must. Grabbing her arm, he spun her around and lifted her up in one swift motion. Seeing his predatory look, she dropped her toothbrush, widening her eyes, surprise mingling with desire. She herself reeled from a rush of passion. He dropped his mouth hard. She couldn't comprehend what she had done to incite him so. She hadn't experienced this kind of forcefulness from him before. And although extremely aroused, she felt suddenly afraid. So would you like me to go on to her speech?
Yeah, her speech, I think, is going to be the most impactful thing.
Yes. So Elizabeth, as you know, is an advocate for equality in genders running the planet. And she goes around giving these speeches called God Has No Gender. She is now in a hall with 2,000 people. She's on stage. She has talked about the goddesses and the gods, and she's gone through a bunch of stuff about history, factual stuff. So this is where the scene picks up. Elizabeth sensed, rather than heard or saw, a disturbance taking place in the audience somewhere to her left. And she took a few cautious steps over to better see what was happening. Looking past the middle row, she saw a man attempting to stand, but the woman sitting next to him was tugging at his jacket sleeve, trying to make him sit back down. Her heart rate sped up, but her words were slow and calm as Elizabeth called out to him, "Sir, you wish to leave? What have I said that offends you?" Upon hearing Elizabeth, the woman dropped her hand. The man stood up and addressed Elizabeth angrily. Everything you said offends me. What are you suggesting? That we give up on God and stop worshiping some ancient goddess we know nothing about? How's that going to benefit humanity today? How's that going to get us out of the mess we're in? You some kind of crazy feminist? And what the hell is going to happen? Realizing the man was not only angry because he felt his gender power to be in jeopardy, but also intent on using her forum to get his 15 minutes of fame, Elizabeth determined to put a stop to his tirade and interrupted him loudly and firmly. "Sir, you've asked me some questions, and even though they were premature, it's only fair that you allow me to answer so I can get on to the heart of the subject I'm here to discuss." Voices all around the room directed a variety of remarks to the man. Some said simply, "Sit down and shut up." Others were more detailed and less polite in what they thought of his lack of manners and intelligence. But many others shouted to Elizabeth above the din, "Yes, I want to hear your answer." She walked back to the table in the center of the stage and said authoritatively, "All right, I'll give in just this once to answer a question before the designated time, but only once." Many in the crowd clapped. Then she said, I'm sorry, but I'm cutting out pieces here. I don't want it to be too long.
Okay.
She said, "We don't want to be embarrassingly thrown out of Davidson Hall because we've overstayed our welcome." The crowd laughed and clapped. She took another sip of water and waited until they became silent. "Firstly, I do not propose that anyone worship the ancient goddess. I'm merely trying to educate you about her existence and the power she once held, how and why she was destroyed, and how all of that unknowingly affects societies today. And it's apparent, based on your outburst, that this is absolutely necessary. My intention is to enlighten people that God has no gender by showing that it's humans who made up goddesses and gods, not the other way around. So you need to bear with me until I can get to it. She fastened her eyes on the man's eyes as she continued. Secondly, as to my being some kind of crazy feminist, as you put it, I'm not crazy, but I'm most definitely and proudly a feminist. Which brings me to ask you a question, sir. Who is that lady sitting next to you? The man bent over, pulling the woman's hand, but she refused to stand. My wife of 35 years, he declared proudly. Elizabeth smiled and asked, sir, do you love your wife? The man became indignant as he replied, of course. And sir, do you believe your wife, who you've lived with and obviously loved for the past 35 years, to be of equal intelligence and capabilities and deserving of the same equal rights as you? He sneered at Elizabeth. Naturally, in some subjects, she's even smarter. Elizabeth responds, I see. So, the definition of a feminist is one who believes females should have the same rights as males. So, I have news for you, sir. You are a feminist.
Mic drop right there at that very moment. I love how you twisted that and you made it. You asked that personal in the book. You had Elizabeth ask that personal question that any person reading it will go, you know what? She has a point. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times we don't think about it like that. We don't think about it in terms of, we think it more of an abstract instead of what's happening in front of us and who we know and who we're, what's involved in our day-to-day life.
Yes, this is so true. A lot of people who have given me a they said their reviews were based on the fact that they felt they were in the book, in the story. They knew the characters. They wanted to be their friends and things like that.
So how did that make you feel when the reviews are telling you that they knew the characters and they felt like they were part of the book? How does that make you as an author feel?
Fulfilled, because that's what you want as an author. I think that's what you want. You want people to feel they're part of the story, that they're there. And I get that a lot. And one review actually wrote something very interesting that I got last week. He said that he was shocked at this book. It's not his usual book that he would read for romance. So much of it is just smut and no proper thoughts and philosophy. And he loved that. And he said it has raised his standards as how he's now going to judge and review a romance book.
Oh, wow.
That
you
was
like on cloud nine on that, right?
Pardon?
You were probably on cloud nine when you heard that, right?
I was. So were all my friends and family.
Speaking of friends and family, what did they think about when you said you have children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren? What did they think about when they said, oh, I'm writing an adult romance book?
Well, I didn't put it like that to them. At the time, the three youngest ones were teenagers. And I actually told them that there's no way they can read my book until they become full adults. and they didn't sneak into it. I mean, they have busy lives. You know what it's like to be a teenager today. And they all wanted to go to college and they're all studying hard and having a great social life as well. So thank goodness they didn't have time to read my book. They were too busy studying school books.
Well, have they read it since then?
One has. The other two are in college. They're really busy. But the strangest thing is since they're in college, I'm getting a lot of men asking for my friendship on Facebook. So I'm wondering what's going on there, but I don't dare ask.
That's funny. Well, let's talk about your inspiration to write because of your travels, because you just talked about in the very beginning about how you traveled all over the place when you were a little, when you were younger, and how you married young as well. Let's talk about that, how that impacted your book, because I love the fact that you put Elizabeth from where you're from. You also have her ties to England, which you said that was part of your background as well. But what other characteristics or what other countries did you incorporate or things that you incorporated from other countries in this book?
Well, as you know, I went to school in Europe and in the UK, and then I traveled from there to a bunch of other European countries. And then my husband and I started traveling to Europe quite a bit. And then we went further. We went to Africa, 6 countries in Africa. And when we would go to these faraway countries, we would spend time. We would go for, you know, a month or so in Africa. And we talked to people. We wanted to get to know the culture and their thinking. And, of course, me particularly, I would talk to the women, especially in countries like that. And we did go back to South Africa another time. Then we spent a month in China, gallivanting all over China. Then we did India again, gallivanted all over, spoke to a lot of people in countries like India too. I speak to a lot of the women. The women are remarkable, what they have come from and what they become. Just, you have to admire women from those countries particularly. Their journey has been so hard, and we have it here too. In many, many instances, many ethnic groups. And so my admiration for these females and for the males that support them, because a lot of them, they only got where they could get because of the males in their lives, that they were fortunate to have intelligent men in their lives who appreciated their equal intelligence. So this is important for me to get across in the book. But, you know, I have to tell you, the sex is great. The sex is fantastic.
Going back to traveling to other countries and talking about and seeing women in other countries, what struck you, what country struck you as being the most, like the women were more revered and like they had a little bit more equality than the men? Of course, across the board, I know gender equality is not there, but what country did you think they respected women more?
I would say mostly European countries. They have equal rights. They, you know, they have control over their bodies. And recently, year before last, we did Europe again. We did 5 countries that time. We actually did a trip on Viking as well. We did the Danube and the Rhine and so on. And of course, I talk to people in all these countries trying to get their opinions. And we go to we always take all the tours that are given. And the men just are shocked at what's going on in the U.S. with the situation, the attack on women, as they put it. The attack on women's rights and this need to control women's bodies. And they were raised with as much religion as we were. I don't know why we have become stuck in some archaic thinking here. But they just don't see it. They don't understand this attack on women and their rights.
Now, when you were writing your book, you said the sex is great. When you were writing the book, was there any time where you're like, oh my gosh, this is too much for me to handle?
No. Well, you know, the thing is, I got married so young. I was a virgin. And for my husband, you know, and I just didn't have the experience in the beginning, and we had to teach each other, you know, we learned as we went along. And this is what I ask people their stories, and they open up to me. They know I'm not going to use names. They know I'm writing. And I mean, I get stories and experiences from all kinds of people. And the men even are quite open, which can be surprising. Yes. It's a lot of fun. I wanted it to be fun. I mean, some of it is very serious. Mm-hmm. I didn't want anybody getting abused. There's none of that. It had to be a loving situation. And it what makes it tough in many ways is the fact that it's a love triangle. Mm-hmm. And this was pointed out to me by both genders in talking to people along the way and living with the different societies I've lived with. Both genders have that issue that they feel strongly for another person when they are strongly in love with somebody else. Mm. It's not uncommon, but people just kind of don't want to talk about it a whole lot until you open it up to them.
Going back to what you just said about having conversations with other people, how do you start off the conversation when you said that people are telling you their stories? How does the conversation come around to that?
Well, my life is very social, always has been. In the Caribbean, the life is very social. People interact a lot. And here in the States, the same thing. Both my husband and I come from large families, so we have that to start with. Mm-hmm. And then I love people. I love talking with people and, you know, getting feedback from them about what they think about things. And they just open up when they know I care. You know, I think it happens to a lot of authors. When they show that they care, people open up and say things they won't say to somebody else.
Has there ever been one time where you're like, oh, wait a second, this is way too much information. I don't need to know all the details.
No, I want the details. I want the details. I want to know especially how people feel, their feelings when they're going through their experiences. Not just the physical, but the emotional, what they're feeling inside, that they're thinking about what they're experiencing at the time. And that just interests me. I just love that. I do a lot of that in my books.
Yeah.
I go through their thinking.
I see that. How long did it take you to write Sacrifices for the Kingdom? From the very start at the very beginning when the idea formed in your head, you wanted to write a romance book.
That took years and years. I started writing in a huge notebook, and the first 10 plus chapters I wrote with a pen by hand, because I'd be writing wherever I was, waiting in a car, you know, waiting for a child at school or something like that, waiting for someone at ballet or soccer or wherever, I would be writing. So I wrote, actually I had several notebooks, but it took me years to get it all put together and down on paper. And I had to learn a computer because even though I worked, I was a designer with our company, I worked with an architect. We designed fabulous homes on the waterfront. I never learned a computer because I was out in the field. I had to make all the selections, and I co-designed not just the interior, but the interiors. And so I would just call one of the ladies at the office and say, do this for me and do that for me. And when eventually there came a time in our lives when my husband said to me, look, you need to take the time now with what's going on in the economy. Take the time and finish writing that book that you've been struggling with for so long. And that's when I had to get a computer expert to teach me how to use a computer. And that's when I got it down. But it took about 3 years of putting it in the computer. But for years, I was jotting things down in notebooks.
Wow. Now, let's talk about what you just said about your husband. Obviously, he supports you in everything. But that moment when he says you need to take time and you need to get that book finished and you need to finish writing it. How did that make you feel?
Ecstatic. It was a rough time in our lives because the economy had tanked. It was 2008. It was the roughest financial time of our lives. Most of us in our circle, all the other designers. I mean, people had to stop developing. Nobody was buying anything. It's not that I had extra time. I always helped my husband with his real estate, but he was totally involved in real estate. But we sold our building and I was home. For him to tell me, give me permission to not just be, you know, a housewife, mm-hmm. and just, you know, gardening and going in our organic garden and getting food for us to eat and that sort of thing, that I could fulfill one of my dreams at long last. It was fabulous, absolutely fabulous.
I love that. Now, how long, once you finished and you got everything in, you got everything in the computer, did it take for you to actually get it published?
Well, that took more time too, because I'm sure you're aware, publishers are not interested in anyone unless they're famous already, mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing. I had some fame from my artwork. I won awards internationally. I created my own medium. The press named it Unique Stainings in Wood. That was something. But other than that, I'm an unknown. And we tried to, we did research on getting an agent, because you know, you need an agent to promote you to a publisher. Mm-hmm. And even to get an agent, they only are interested in you if you're famous and that your book is totally finished. And I was investigating these people before I'd quite finished. Anyway, it got to the point that I had finished, and my husband and I decided we're going to have to hire some people to help us. And so we did. We hired a PR company. I have a fabulous book shepherd, and she is my guidance through all of this. And eventually I had my own publishing company, and I published independently in my own publishing company.
Now, there's two things that I want to hit on there. First of all, you just said about your publishing company. Do you publish other authors, or is it just your work that you're publishing?
Right now, it's just mine, because it's all brand new to me. And, you know, I have three books in the works. Apart from this book one in the trilogy, I'm getting ready to launch book two, and I'm still researching and writing book three. And aside from that, I'm also writing another book about my experiences. So it's, you know, quite a bit. And so I'm not really pursuing other authors, not at this stage.
And then you talk about a book shepherd. What exactly is that?
She's just on top of everything. She gives you complete guidance, advice. She finds things for you to do, and she promotes you, you know, along with a PR company. And, you know, all my mess ups and so on, she will help me through them. Mm-hmm. And she's just awesome. She does everything necessary to get you successful.
Now, you said the second book is already written, and the third book, you're writing it now. Are you going to still do the gender equality and power issue, or is there going to be other issues that you touch on in these books?
every one of the books in the trilogy is a different speech that Elizabeth gives in a different part of the world on gender equality. Every one of the books has that. It's a primary thing in her life, apart from her loves, the two men that she loves beyond, you know. She's a very passionate person.
So you said the second one is coming out when?
We're hoping for June, actually.
Okay. And yeah. The third one, your writings will probably be next year when it comes out?
Yes, maybe. If I get lucky and get my head together, maybe before that. Yeah.
Are there some scenes that you're writing now and even written in the past that you think at the very beginning, I really like the way this scene worked, but then later on when you go back and you're editing your book, you realize that scene doesn't work now like I wanted it to, and you've had to tweak it?
Yes. No, you're quite right. I think most authors go through a lot of tweaking from, you know, those that I've spoken to. And that's why you read your book a million times over and over, you know, and when something happens in your own life and you want to put it in there, or in somebody's life that is so profound that you borrow it, of course, no names or anything, you put it into one of your characters' lives, then you sometimes do have to go back and make some changes because, you know, that's not in their personality now, sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a constant work in progress.
I love it. Have there been where you've started and you're like, I don't even like this, and you just scrapped everything and had to restart? Or have you just kind of found something that you can work with what you've written?
You know, I've never really scrapped something completely. I've tweaked it. I've made some changes. But I've never really just thrown it out. Even when I wrote this book and I had two educators read the manuscripts, and their advice was fabulous because it showed me that I definitely had to stick with the trilogy. I mean, I was unnerved at first to do a trilogy because it's so much work. Mm-hmm. And then your memory has to be sharp because of what you had in the first book, and you have to be careful how you word it and how you, you know, the personality person, how they are growing or going backwards. So it's just unnerving to do that. But I even when the writing just flows, you still have to go back and tweak stuff. At least I do.
I love how you made this a series, a trilogy, because a lot of people get like caught up in the book, and they get caught up in the characters, and they're like, what happens next? And it's like, to me, it's the saddest thing when a book is only one and done and there's nothing to continue the story because you fall in love with the characters. With that said, you also just said it was the hardest way to write too, because you have to go back and remember what you wrote in the first mm-hmm. book. Or remember the characters. What was been your hardest thing to do writing this trilogy? Which character has been the hardest one to continue on with to make sure you're keeping them on the right way you want them to go?
One of the male protagonists. I was upset to do it. I don't want to give away too much, sweetie. I just want you to know that there were times that I would be writing sometimes 2-3 in the morning because the ideas woke me up. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I would see tears on my keyboard and I realized I was crying through writing this whole thing. So I don't know if that answers your question.
It definitely answers my question. Okay. Now, if this trilogy became either a TV series, we'll have to cut off all the spicy parts, but if it became a TV series or a movie, what actors would you want to play the characters?
I've been asked this question before, and it's tough because there's so many great characters out there, so many fabulous, talented actors and actresses. And quite frankly, that is my goal. That's where I'm heading, I hope. And well, there's no hope. You just have to make it happen.
Yep.
I don't want to name anyone because, quite frankly, there's a lot of great people coming up all the time. Mm-hmm. But I know somebody is out there. I know those people are out there. But could be any one of the well-known guys today or somebody new.
Hmm. Well, our time is almost up. Is there one last little nugget, whether it's something that we touched on that you want to retouch on or something that maybe we didn't discuss that you would like to share with us before we say goodbye to everybody?
One of the protagonists, one of the male protagonists, actually Prince Michael, he also does something very civic-minded. He's very concerned about the planet. And he speaks before the United Nations in Geneva. And his speech is called Climate Change, Man's Fate or Folly. Mm-hmm. And in other books, he will be going to different countries to give that speech. So
that is something else you're passionate about. I love the fact that you're taking a book that's entertaining for people to read, a little bit spicy, and be able to say, I want to entertain, but also educate with these issues.
Yes, I want to enlighten. Yes, thank you.
Now, where can people find you first?
Well, of course, Amazon. And they can get the book at Barnes & Noble, all bookstores, anywhere that books are sold. And then I'm on Facebook, on Instagram, Goodreads, BookBub, all of that group. I'm totally committed, involved in all those different groups. They can find me. Of course, my website, patriciadarcylaughlin.com. They can even purchase a book off of that website. There's a button there. So, yeah, they can find me anywhere.
And also, too, when do you think the book that you're writing about your life will come out? Because I think that's going to be an interesting book as well.
It is very interesting. And I do go back into some history about the family because that's interesting. And the unfortunate thing is I didn't learn about much of the history until I was grown up, married with children. And when my father died and my mother presented me with these papers, I was just so shocked that there was so much history, important history. Yeah. So
when do you think that one will come out?
Hopefully about a year after the final book 3 in the trilogy.
Okay. Well, you're welcome to come on and discuss all your other books, the 2 other books in the trilogy, as well as your autobiography or your memoir, as people are calling it memoirs now, to come on and discuss that, because I think you do have a great story to tell.
Thank you so much. Oh, gosh, I appreciate you so much. It was my pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being with me as well. As always, guys, I will put in the show notes everywhere you can find Patricia, as well as Grabbing Sacrifices for Kingdoms. And I want you to be blessed. Like and subscribe. If you're on YouTube, like and subscribe to YouTube and comment, and I will share the comments with Patricia, as well as if you're listening to the podcast, please like and subscribe. Until next time, guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Chats from the Blog Cabin.
Hit subscribe.
And don't miss the next episode.